Welcome to the Blue Vineyard podcast, where we explore the Adventist digital ecosystem. I'm Luke Ferrugia, co-founder of Blue Vineyard, and I'll be your host. In each episode, we'll sit down with different leaders and uncover their insights, hear inspiring stories, and get their hard-earned wisdom to share with other ministry leaders. On today's episode, we have Caleb Isley. He is the digital content specialist for the Oregon Conference, and he's responsible for projects like Humans of Adventism, How the Church Works, and the Bridges Over Walls podcast. Caleb is an amazing storyteller, and empathy is his superpower. So without further ado, I'll hand over to the interview. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Blue Vineyard podcast. My name's Luke, and I have Caleb Isley with me today. Welcome to the show, Caleb.
Hey, Luke. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Well, this is not our first radio. This is not our first time actually recording together, is it?
I was trying to think of how many years we have actually kind of just back and forth crossed paths. I know, I mean, we're knocking on probably close to a decade now, which is crazy to say.
Yes.
But yeah, and it's funny, you know, I know we're going to end up talking about podcasts today, but you know, the podcast that I currently run, the title of that came from an interview that I did with you way back before I even moved to where I live now. So there's a
Wow.
lot of cool history there. And so I'm just excited to talk today.
Yeah, that is very cool. So the first time that we spoke, for anyone who's interested, was for another podcast that I run called Oz Table Talk. And Caleb was one of the very, very early guests we had on that. And it was close to 10 years ago because we started that podcast in 2016. So and you were probably in the first year. So yeah,
absolutely. I think so.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, I thought, what's a creative way for us to sort of encompass a little bit of your story, just to give people some context if they haven't heard of you before? And so the question that I'd like to ask is, if you had to split your life into chapters and label them, what would your chapters so far be, and what one are you in now?
Oh, man. There are so many. It's always hard to consolidate because my life is one that just goes in so many paths so many times a month and a year.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the big story beats, I think there'd be maybe ages 1 to 6 living in, you know, relatively stable home and very poor part of the country for the most part, big parents divorce, you know, and then there's kind of first through 12th grade of Adventist education, very conservative area, and just a whole lot of things that really challenged us growing up in the Adventist church, where the vast majority of us who grew up in that time and space, didn't stick around. And then I would say, you know, early adulthood, my wife and I got married 18 and 20 years old. So there's the
That's crazy.
Broke era of driving cars that don't work and wrestling with our relationship to church and trying to figure out our careers. And, and then, yeah, right around 2017, you know, really, really wrestled with my relationship to church and was leaning in life to writing and journalism and just storytelling work, and decided to kind of put that to use in partnership with the church. The church as a people, there was several years where I was kind of seen as antagonistic maybe to the organized church, and still in some areas I am, but you know, I've kind of cultivated a relationship where we can partner and kind of each do what we do best. So, you know, the season of life that I'm in now, I've moved with my wife to Portland, Oregon. We've lived here for 6 years. And so just that's the longest amount of time that I've been with one group of people in one place, same apartment that we moved into, to really grow, and especially to grow through crisis. I live at a historic time in the Oregon Conference where, I mean, together we've built a brand new system of communication together right before COVID, right before a lot of historic weather disasters, and just through somewhat of a falling apart financially of this organization, where last year over 40 people were laid off. We'd built an unsustainable system here financially and kind of dealt with the consequences all at once. And so really there hasn't been a 6 month period since I moved here to Oregon that we weren't dealing with some major cultural shift or world disaster. And so, you know, just shepherding our communication team through that crisis and figuring out the best ways to connect with, yes, Adventist church members, but also to the communities that they're surrounded by and involved in. I would say that chapter is the one that I'm in now.
Yeah. Okay. So in this chapter that you're in, the, you said shepherding the communication team. So what does your team look like?
Yeah. So we're five person team, with a whole lot of, drop in, drop out creative community. So we have kind of five full-time employees with a bunch of subcontracting partnerships, mentors, interns, you know, a bunch of different people that come in and out of this place, especially under 40 years old. This is kind of the hub for young creatives in our area. But what our team looks like is, you know, I handle, the storytelling elements, the, a lot of the writing for crisis communication, and then all of our creative projects, I end up as the producer for them. So I make sure that we have the people who know what they're doing, you know, from the very beginning idea to when it releases to the public and after. I kind of oversee all of those processes. We have, you know, team member Mitchell, who does all of our filming, all of our video and audio editing, all of our live event production. So he's setting up screens and cables and furniture and set designs and all of that. And then we've got our teammate Chrissy, who handles all the print communication and all kinds of kind of the big, just programming things and website management, newsletter every week. So we've really got a whole lot coming in and out of this department.
It almost sounds like you've built like a full service, like, design agency, but internal to the conference, right?
There's almost nothing we can't do. I tell people it kind of looks like if you've ever seen a Spider-Man movie when he goes into the Daily Bugle. It's just a bunch of people running around working on newspapers and stories. That's kind of, especially in the summer when we've got kind of the most people at once leading up to our camp meeting. That's kind of what it is. Just a bunch of people running around working on stuff. I get a bunch of steps, even just here in the office every day, because I'm running to all these different places, talking to people. You'll see me walk out the door and be on a phone call and do Zoom calls like this. And it's just it's a very active place.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of fun. It really does.
Yeah.
So one of the things that you said that your key, one of your key responsibilities is the storytelling aspect. So how do you tell good stories?
Yeah, I think you tell good stories when the reader can see themselves in the story. And so telling good stories is a combination of being genuine and trustworthy, so that the person that you're interviewing or the people and community you're working with is willing to share those vulnerable parts of themselves. And even the challenging parts. I go in to a lot of these stories representing an organization. And there's always a lot of baggage, no matter where you go. It could be something that happened to somebody's grandfather that was a pastor or grandmother or something. And people remember those things. And so part of my job is to show up and be a person who takes care of that person in front of me and always does this in a way that is going to make them excited for the story to get out there. And so, yeah, having that trust is number one to telling a good story. And then writing it in a way that people can actually see the story that's there, or filming it in a way, or, you know, whatever the medium is, how do you take the most important aspects of that and transmit the meaning to the person who's there reading or watching it? Sometimes that looks like good questions. Sometimes that looks like staying an extra hour and a half or two so that you can rake the yard with them. And then the real story happens then. Sometimes that means I am down at a school serving hot lunch and walking around with the janitor and sitting with teachers on their breaks. And I've even been in a kindergarten classroom. I'm 6'2", sitting in one of those little kid chairs with the kids drawing. Whatever it takes to kind of build that immediate trust with people and let them know that you're there, not just to take from them, but to do something that really lifts everybody up.
When you think about those interactions that you've had where you've connected with people in that way, Can you perhaps share a story of like one that really stands out in your mind as one of the best experiences that you've had in connecting with someone like that in that scenario?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. One story that's really important to me, and this is a crazy one. You know, I don't know how many of the listeners grew up in the Adventist church and system, but I was a member at a church that did a really good job about being involved in their community, very active with community service, very outgoing. Lots of people who came to church didn't grow up Adventist, didn't know perfect theology. They just wanted to be together. And so I was drawn for that reason to that church. And there was a lady there who showed up about halfway through my membership there. And, you know, she had these tattoos all the way up her neck and down onto both arms. And I was working on a project called Oregon Adventist Stories at the time. And I just asked her, I was like, hey, would you care if I interviewed you for this project? And she's like, what is Adventist Stories? Like what, you know? And so I had to explain, I work for, you know, a group of churches and things. And she's like, yeah, sure. She's like, but I got to warn you, like my story's really, really rough. Like there's, I can't share it without, you know, a content warning. It's very graphic. It's very hard to hear. And so of course I'm like, well, that now I have to hear it, you know? And so, early on, one of the things that she told me was I started coming to this church because it's the first church I've been in that didn't judge me for my tattoos. And I thought, where in the Adventist space could that be true? It's a very rare thing for somebody to feel initially safe, coming from her background. And so, you know, already she has this positive association with the church, which is great for me. Sit down with her in her house, and she shares with me that, you know, in her younger life, she was really involved with a particular gang here in Oregon. And specifically, she was dating one of the leaders of the gang, a very abusive man. They had a few kids together, and or at least one child together, and there came a time where she wanted out of the relationship. And instead of letting her leave, he tried to take the kids by force. He tried to harm her. And so she tells this very daring, you know, horrifying story of how she took her kids out of the place where she was and escaped and ultimately came to safety. And what I loved about that story was a couple things. Number one, I'm mostly a stranger, again, representing an organization. And she knows, telling that story, that there will be judgments on her from the very beginning, from her picture showing up, from talking about her children, from describing the life that she was living. But she was willing to tell it anyway. And the second was just being able to share that, you know, in a lot of Adventist spaces and a lot of more traditional Christian spaces, I think we're afraid to venture out of the template a lot. We stick to a certain safe format of things. And what's difficult about that is for those of us who have lived through really traumatic things, just non-traditional lives, it's very hard for us to see ourselves in Adventist media and in stories that come out of Adventist spaces. And so getting the chance to share something like that with very little censorship and just being able to do that in a way that made her feel seen and heard and loved, but also in a way where the community overall really rallied around her, supported her, said, we're so glad you're here. We're so glad you're safe. We're so glad your kids are safe, you know, and thank you for being vulnerable with us. It was just this really positive experience all around that I kind of take with me as a model for future stories, where it was church at its best. It was someone looking for a place that would be good to them and their kids. And when they came into that place, they were treated well. And so, yeah, I think that was one that really stands out to me. And I would love the chance, and I relish any chance that I can get to talk with people who don't generally trust the church, who don't generally trust Christians, who don't generally trust men or white people. That trust is a gift And if you steward it well, it just turns into the most incredible bonding experiences with human beings.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, you mentioned these previous experiences, different versions of storytelling that you've had, right? I mean, right from the, you know, Humans of Adventism and through to these other projects that you've had. We're going to get to talking a bit more specifically about podcasting, but how do you feel like all the previous projects you had prepared you for podcasting as a new format?
Oh yeah. You know, one of the things that I've gotten a lot better at is just being able to improvise conversation. So naturally I'm an introverted person. As a child, I was afraid of literally everything you can think of. And talking to strangers was just my nightmare.
Yeah.
And so I think having that experience of being really intentional about initiating conversation about deep topics with people, you know, I've shed all of the fluff, basically. So there's nothing in me that says, what's your favorite color? What are your hobbies? Yep. You know, all those kind of throwaway questions are gone and they've been kind of refined out in how I communicate with people. Mm-hmm. So because I started podcasting so much later in my journey, I'm able to think as an editor, I'm able to think as a producer, and I'm able to think as just a conversationalist. Yep. And so I ask better questions now. I know when not to move on from a topic. So if there's something really important there, we don't just say, okay, question five, you know, you stay in there and maybe you don't get to anything else, but you stay on that topic that really brings that person to life and matters to them. And so I think those social skills are really the number one thing I brought to podcasting. I'm still not a technical guy. I have to partner with somebody who's a great editor and a great film person. Because I try. I have a camera. I have the equipment for these things. If you ask me what lens I'm using on my camera, I cannot tell you. I don't know. but I'm able to have these teams of people that are smarter than me and much better at the things I'm not.
Mm. You mentioned the art of asking these good questions. Is that kind of some form of like a discipline? Do you keep a library of questions, or is it more spontaneous and you just go down a certain line of questioning and just get curious?
It's a lot closer to a philosophy. I think it's more of a principle than like these specific questions. I will say there are questions. So I have some go-to ones that I learned early on that I always go back to. One is about change, right? So I love asking people, what's an event or a person or a moment that changed you? And, you know, I've probably said this exact sentence in some of your podcast interviews before, but these questions give you a beginning, middle, and an end. They're a story in the question all laid out for the person, where when you ask about change, they tell you a before. You can't have change without saying what you were, right? And then that story, that climax, that moment of impact is the thing that caused the change. And then after, you get the chance to say, okay, you were this, or you were like this, or you thought like this, and now you're here. And so it's interesting for everybody. It gives the person a chance to reflect on their own life in a meaningful way. And it has that story built into the question. But I think more importantly is learning how to recognize what people want to share about and what they would find meaningful. And they're not always the same thing. What people want to share about might be, I like Caleb and I want to help because we're friends, but I'm not necessarily comfortable sharing my story, right? So what I want to share about is whatever makes him happy. Me as the interviewer I'm not looking for that. What's meaningful, and if you can do this in a way where somebody feels safe and good about it afterward, is, you know, something that either somebody's proud of, something where they feel known by sharing it, something that they want the world to understand about them and how they act and see the world and interact with it. That's really what I'm after, is that meaningful thing that they're willing to trust me with and trust the public with. And so people might not want to share about their parents' divorce or their car accident, but it can be really meaningful. And if you do it in a way where they can trust you, and the way that you've done that, I think that's really the gold there. That whether it's a written story, a podcast, a film, documentary series, if you can bring that out and just show that deep side of humanity, I think we all, whether we've experienced what they have or not, find a way toward that person in hearing and knowing them like that.
Mm. Yeah, that's powerful. And I think, you know, because this episode really is targeted at people who are trying to get better or start something like this. And I think if people apply just what you're saying there, that will so dramatically improve the quality of the connection that they experience. That thank you so much. Appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah.
You've been involved with more than one podcast, right? Like I'm sure you've been interviewed on many, but as far as ones that you have had a hand in producing, can you just give us a snapshot of the different podcasts that you have created?
Sure. Yeah. Off the top of my head, I've been involved with three, I believe, major podcasts. We produced a podcast during the pandemic called Growing Together for the Growing Young kind of initiative. And that was just interviews with people who either have succeeded in making their church spaces safe for young people, or interviewing young people about kind of, you know, their wants and needs and perspectives on church and how to kind of patch up that relationship. The most major project still to this day that I've worked on was with some incredible creators, Heather Moore and Nina Velato. Both much more professional in this space. I came on because I know how to talk to people. That was my only skill that I brought to the table. And that I'm willing to ask controversial questions if it helps get to the main point of what we're doing. So that was called How the Church Works. That was a partnership with the North American Division of Seventh-day Adventists. By far the most popular podcast project that I've been involved with. And basically it just looked at our history and culture and structure of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And we got to ask a lot of the questions that people don't get to ask from, you know, church leadership, former leadership. And I was able to make people sweat a little bit, which was great, because how often do you get the chance to just have a former GC president in front of you, or Adventist college president, and say, why on earth are you doing this? You know, why are things this way? And sometimes, you know, I think those questions were, you know, I still have them. And sometimes we got some really good information on why and context that I wouldn't have known. And then currently, we just finished our second season of a podcast called Bridges Over Walls. That is both an attempt to address the relational barriers that Christians create and kind of figure out what to do about that, and also a live training for our team. That podcast goes on all of the audio platforms, but it also goes on YouTube, Instagram Reels, TikTok. This is just a way for us to learn in real time without just dedicating hours and hours to classes that don't end up being used by our members.
Yep. Nice. So, and all of those various projects, each of them are a bit different in style and format, right?
Like totally different.
Yeah. I really, because How the Church Works, I personally loved that, because there is very little of that kind of format in Adventist media at all, right? Like that more documentary NPR kind of feel, where you're actually going on a journey and there's people and they're on a mission and you're following that mission as you, as you track through it. I didn't start listening to that until after, like, they had all been released, and I just hit them and I binged them so quickly, because I just got really invested in that. Of the different projects, which one did you enjoy the most, and which one taught you the most?
Well, you know, I think How the Church Works is probably the one that I both enjoyed the most and taught me the most, just because I was working with a team of people that knew so much that I wanted to know. When you talk about the style of that podcast, that's only possible because Nina knows so much about sound design. So when you go back to the 1800s, you get a little banjo noise and wagon wheels and people talking in the background. It's like you're a lot more immersed in the story, because the world is kind of dynamic around the podcast. And that's something I can't replicate. That's yep. something that she's so good at. And so I got to watch her really bring what to me were a bit drier conversations by cutting them down, making them concise, and then building that audio world around everything. You know, I probably listened to every episode of that 15, 20 times,
yep.
Just even leading up to it before it was out, because I was so impressed by how all of these sporadic conversations and things were able to come into one cohesive narrative through her work. And then just for enjoyment purposes, you know, all three of us came in as, I would say, skeptics, but with the willingness to be open to being wrong, to seeing the good. But we were able to come in with very real questions that I think are reflective of a lot of our listeners. And so, yeah, I think that was a really positive experience for me end to end. And that we worked on that for a year and a half or 2 years together.
Yeah.
And so huge learning experience. It's like two of your good friends and you get to do a college class on and get paid to do a topic that you're interested in, you know? And so, yeah, if I could do it again, I absolutely would. It was wonderful.
If you could just to go into a little more detail there around the workflow, what did the workflow look like for that? Because I imagine, you know, for something like this, the workflow is very much, you know, you do your preparation beforehand, you know, think about where you want it to go, you sit down, you have the discussion, you edit it, you publish it. For something like that, it's a much larger beast. So yeah, can you walk us through what did the workflow look like?
Yeah, it was a little iffy for a while because we got this contract right before COVID started. Okay. And so we were challenged to produce this, even though we all lived within half an hour of each other. We had to be very careful about when we were physically together and then how we did each of our interviews and things. Workflow kind of, we always would have production meetings about the different episode ideas. And this is the most labor intensive project I've ever been part of. I mean, Heather was reading entire books about like women's history in the Adventist Church and the founding of Oakwood College and the history of race in the Adventist Church and education. And we were reading Ellen White books as we were doing a couple episodes on Ellen White and going through the ones that you don't really see showing up in the Adventist bookstores, but kind of the ones that exist and you might have heard of them, but it's like, I mean, we're to the point where we were reading her grocery lists. Really in depth, like, I know what the popular views are on this, but what if I set out to discover myself, what's actually there and what questions do I have after I really engage with this material myself? Workflow was a lot of research. It was in person and Zoom meetings. It was multiple interviews per episode that would last an hour to 2 hours. And then once you kind of have all of this documented material, you've got a half dozen books on Heather's table at her house, and you've got, you know, all these interviews and things. Then we would write, and if you listen to the credits of How the Church Works, you'll notice that Heather and I wrote different episodes. And so for us, that was kind of building and filling out the overarching theme and story that these interviews contribute to. Yep. So we would always have intros where we talk about the questions we're going to ask. We would have to kind of consolidate entire decades of material to tie to the next thing that the person was going to talk about. Really research each person who talked, do some background checking to make sure they were an authoritative voice, read through their positions to make sure we weren't all getting like the liberal side of things or the conservative side of things. And so it was really a team effort where even after we had drafts of the episodes, I would get sent like, all right, here's the first draft from Nina. I would listen through about 5 times and I would make notes of like, I think that we lost the most important point here, or I think that the pacing around 29 minutes starts to drag, or, you know, all of these different notes. And so I want to say that because this was a well-funded project. Mm-hmm. That's the only way we were able to put in that much labor. And I don't think most people have that time.
Yeah. Yeah. When you said how long, like a 2-year project to, yeah, to execute, that was my first thought. I was like, wow, like, you know, who paid for that? Because that's, yeah, that's time. And with three, I mean, I don't assume you guys were working on it. Were you working on it full time or that was like in addition to your other work, right?
Yeah. At the time, it was one of 5 major contracts that I had. And so part of the reason that it's 2 years is some weeks we had 10 hours to work on it. And some weeks we were fully occupied in other things. So all 3 of us were doing other things in addition, and we could only collaborate a certain amount of time. So that's part-time most weeks for 2 years.
Yeah. So now your more recent project, you're working on Bridges Over Walls, and you're in your second season now. And what did you learn in the first season that you were able to apply differently in the second season?
Yeah. So, I'm coming from a completely different world when I come into the organized church, right? Mm-hmm. My politics are very far in the opposite direction of most of Adventism. Mm-hmm. My view on people, I mean, I have a very simple view. It's love God, love people. And what I mean by love people is make them as safe as possible, and actively create spaces where they can be themselves, be known, be safe, be comfortable, and not be shamed by the church. And so you can imagine, especially for our more conservative membership, that can be a problem sometimes. And in season 1, our conference basically gave me a ton of trust and freedom to say, okay, you have this vision. We trust you. If there's a problem, we'll help deal with that, or we'll come and challenge you if needed. But aside from that, maybe we'll sign off at the end. But for the most part, this is your show to produce, which is wonderful and daunting, because you have so many opinions. And at the same time, you want to make something that actually challenges the church to be more like Jesus. And so how do you have that line of challenging them in a way where they'll actually do something?
Yeah, you're challenging also, the very organization that's funding, right? Like that's a real line. Yeah,
I'm talking about the place I work in some. I'm talking about the churches and the schools that we still have. Thankfully, I'd spent years building trust with my community, and that's the only way that it's happened. That you wouldn't pull a random person out of nowhere to do this, and no it go way. Over well. But I think I learned a lot about the hot spots and tension points of the church, even that I didn't know before. But I also learned how many people are willing to come back to the table and talk to us if you're really having a good faith conversation. One of the episodes in season 2 that I got a little more bold with is I interviewed a classmate of mine, high school classmate, who is very much not ever willing to come back and engage, like very done with Adventism. She really believes that overall this is a harmful thing, and it's something that has hurt her and her family pretty badly. And just in general, just has a lot of issues with it. But when I approached her and said, hey, what I would love is, even if you don't believe that this is something you'll ever personally participate in, would you be willing to have a conversation with me about how we can create a different experience for the kids we're raising now? We're still going to be Christian. We're still going to be Adventist. We still have these beliefs. But within and under that umbrella, is there anything we can do that you feel would be make things better in the future? And she said, absolutely. And so, we've got, I think the episode is called Why Are They Leaving Young People in the Church? And so we have Crystal on there. She's got her nose ring fully in. She's got her many piercings and tattoos, and she's not railing against the church. She's just having an honest, genuine conversation about her perspective. And I think there was a lot that we could take and apply and learn from what she offered.
Yeah.
And so I think I've just gotten more confident, but also a little more informed on how far you can push a conversation without just alienating people.
I remember there was a guy, his wife was a part of our church, and he was not. Mm-hmm. And every time we would have a gathering of some variety, he always came along, right? He was happy to be there. But everybody kind of tiptoed around the fact that he was an atheist. And and I remember it was the first time I think I ever had a conversation quite like this one. And it occurred to me one day, this guy is like, he's a nice guy. Like I really don't expect him to like tear my face off if I asked him a question. Right. And so I said to him one day, hey, I'm curious, like, you know, obviously, you know, you don't come along to church. So like, you know, what are your thoughts? Like, where does that come from? What have been your experiences? And, and he's like, oh, you know, and he just kind of brushed it off and didn't give me an answer. And I said, but I'm actually curious though. Like, you know, can we have that conversation? And I think once he realized that I wasn't picking at him, like I'm trying to convert you.
Yep.
I'm trying to understand you. And he gave me a very different response then. And he was still reluctant to go to the real place, if you know what I mean. But he started to go, okay, well here, like, I'm not comfortable with this, and this. And we had a great conversation about it. And that opened the door to some future conversations. And I'd love to be able to put a bow on that and say, oh, and it was wonderful. And we got baptized and whatever. That's not the way it always works, but it opens those doors. And I think while ever people categorize others, you know, the whole bridges over walls thing, right? While ever someone's on the other side of that wall and you're not having the conversation, there's no hope even of a positive relationship, let alone conversion or actually benefiting their life in some way, right? And so it's a completely different posture. And I know after that changed how I approached people. You know, I was quite young when I had that conversation, but it really shaped how I then related to people who didn't think like I thought. And so I think that's a really important shift that needs to happen corporately, not just corporately only happens if it happens for individuals, right? And that's really a lot of what you're doing. You're modeling this so people hear what you're doing and then go, oh yes, I can do that too. And that's not scary, you know. So how, like, from your perspective with podcasting as a format, how has it benefited you in general? Like, I mean, you've got a lot of different things and things that you think about. How has podcasting as a format, where does that fit into the greater Caleb picture, and how has it benefited you?
I think that I come at this as somebody who's really personally grown through podcasts. You know, you'll remember when we first talked, I used to work for a pest control company. You know, I would drive this van with a heating system for bed bugs all over South Carolina, sometimes up to 3 hours each way to my jobs. And so I just devoured podcasts. I mean, I have listened to probably thousands of episodes of podcasts just since maybe 2015. You know, in 10 years. And so, you know, this was a very intimate type of media for me, where, you know, I've never been one to watch hours of YouTube videos. I've never been one to really be enamored by TikTok and a lot of more the visual side that so many people seem to really engage with. I want that very intimate, meaningful, longer form way of engaging with things. I like having the brain space to think and mull over things as I'm listening, to really exist in a place for longer than 30 seconds and longer than 5 minutes. And especially, I'm a very active person with my hands. So I'm always washing dishes, cleaning, you know, driving, on a walk. I like the fact that I can somewhat do my life and have some of this engagement going while I'm doing those things. And so podcasting as a medium, you know, because I know how it affected me, I really wanted to be able to create that for other people. I just didn't have the technical knowledge to do it. And even still, I have a hard time being concise and being that kind of snappy delivery. And so there are very few people with short attention spans that will engage with anything that I work on, just because I work on long, deep, meaningful stuff. And even then, you know, it's easy to lose people just because life is busy. So yeah, I think I look at it as casting less of a wide net and more of just a deep engagement with whoever happens to spend the time. And I've really gotten that through each of the projects, but especially Bridges Over Walls. I have the most meaningful conversations with people who either are just ready to be done with religion, mm-hmm. or people who have already made that decision and are seeing an alternate path and an alternate way of thinking through this work that they didn't know was possible before. And so it's not hundreds or thousands of people that I get to talk to, but it might be half a dozen in a month that I really get to talk to and walk through decisions in their life, questions about faith. Sometimes I'm not an answer guy. Sometimes I'm just a, hey, I don't know. Like, I don't know why that happened. I don't know the answer to that theological question you have, but just having somebody there that's able to say that and to say, I don't think you're bad for questioning. Hmm. And I don't think you're bad for doubting those things. You're just a human being who needs some answers. Hmm. And I'm right there with you.
What, you know, if you were to look at the, all of the possibilities that are out there,
yeah,
you know, let's say you had, you know, unlimited funding and Caleb can just go and produce any podcast that he likes. Yeah. Over any time scale, what are some of the ideas you would chase?
Oh man, I have a couple. You know, in a different timeline, I had an idea for a podcast called Cutting Ties. Mm-hmm. And basically this was about endings. So why people chose to end relationships, why they chose to quit their jobs, leave religion. But I really wanted to explore that space of why people make these major changes in life. And I think because I've been through a certain amount of trauma myself and that kind of thing, I think there's something really beautiful about people being brave enough to say, this is either not working for me or it's harming me, and I choose something different, even if I don't know what that is. And so, yeah, really exploring that space, the style, I love investigative journalism. Yeah. So I listen to true crime podcasts. I listen to a lot of like, Throughline and some of these different podcasts that really go into interesting history and stories and, questions about the world. I would love to be able to do that in a way that's fully audio engineered. And just really, really compelling that challenges people and how they think about other people. But, you know, I think storytelling and just human nonfiction stories is always going to be the area that I'm just enamored with. I think living in each person is so many interesting details and experiences and choices, and you really never run out of them if you take the time to get to know that person.
In the broader sort of Adventist podcasting world, what do you think is the most underrated podcast that you've come across?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, I think that more people should listen to the Adventist History podcast all the way through. Mm-hmm. Again, it's one of those like big commitments. It's almost now like choosing an anime. I mean, it's, you look at Adventist History podcast, there's over 100 episodes. You're like, whoa, where do I start? Yep. But it's such a needed exploration of how we got here. And I think that it has softened some of the sharper edges on my expectations of the church where, you know, I'm like, okay, this is where we came from. This is what we've been through. This is why we became this. And some of those things were actually better reasons than I thought. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good one. You know, I think Seeking What They Sought is doing great work. They're doing something that I have had a really, really hard time being willing to do. And that is just going directly to the people that they might personally disagree with most, that they might see as very harmful, and just trying to understand the psychology behind what they're doing. You know, I benefit from being able to listen to some of these people who I believe are villains in my story, just plain and simple. I mean, I don't like what they do, but I do like understanding where they're coming from and understanding a little more of how on earth somebody makes such opposite decisions and approaches this faith from such an opposite place than me. I think it informs how I can interact with people who have some of the same sensitivities and experiences and hangups that I might not.
The last official question you could say that I was on my mind is that Is there someone in your sphere of knowledge who doesn't have a podcast but should?
Kevin Wilson. Kevin Wilson.
Oh, yes.
My dream, if Kevin called me tomorrow and he said, I want to commit to having just to sit down with you once a month and we can make a podcast about life and philosophy and stories. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's one of those people. I have the opportunity to have him as my local church pastor now here in Oregon. And, you know, we've known each other for years and years from afar, but getting the chance to meet him in real life, go to his house, my wife and I eat dinner with him and his wife, just to get to know the person behind all that. Mm. Most people, I would say, are shallower when you meet them. And I believe this is a person who's deeper when you meet him. And so, yeah, I think he would be great. I also understand that if he were to start a podcast, it would probably take away from some of the other great work that he's doing. So
he's doing a lot of things.
Incredible work. Just incredible. And somebody else I'd love to throw in there that has a podcast that I should have mentioned, an underrated Adventist podcast, Dr. Seth Pierce. If you haven't heard the Beast and Bible podcast, the specific niche that they're covering is how fear is weaponized in Christian spaces, how fear affects us, how it changes us and makes us do monstrous things. Just the most interesting and I would say one of the most courageous projects to go out there. I mean, he talks about Dungeons and Dragons, horror movies, spirituality, demon possession, and our history with all of these things and how they became kind of this outsized boogeyman that we're afraid that our kids are going to be in these mortal dangers when really sometimes it's our fear that's maybe the bigger issue and something that's really damaging in our communities. So, you know, Seth already has that podcast, but if people haven't listened to it, you gotta. I mean, it's a top five.
Yeah. All right. I will check that out because I have heard his name, but I haven't actually followed the podcast up. So I've just written it on my pad. I will check him out. So
yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Well, Caleb, that's the full picture that I had that I wanted to ask. Is there anything, if you were to add anybody to anyone that was perhaps out there thinking about starting something of their own and thinking, it's saturated. Everyone else already has a podcast or whatever it might be. What would be your advice to someone thinking of starting out?
I would say absolutely start. I think podcasting is one of the easiest entry point media production things. And I only say that because if you take the pressure off to create the next biggest podcast, if you take the pressure off to have thousands of listeners or to make income off of this, if you're really just making it to talk about, you know, things that are important in your pocket of the world, and you make it for the people who, I mean, have specific people in mind that you're making it for, whether that's your church, whether that's your family, whether that's your city. I think when you think local and we think about specific pockets of people and what they might need and benefit from, podcasting is an incredible, incredible way to do that. And again, instead of casting this giant wide net and hoping for thousands and thousands of people, what if you just use this as an ongoing way to initiate conversation together and grow together and tackle some of these things that you might not just naturally bring up together? I highly recommend doing it. I think do it even if you're bad. Again, I think this is one of those things where the market can't be too saturated for what you're doing unless you're doing it for the whole world. Yep. If you're doing it for your corner of the world, I guarantee you there's not thousands of people in your town or your church doing this. You might be one of two. And so when you take that opportunity, you know, see it as a hands-on college class. See it as a way to teach yourself a vital skill for the future and also connect with people along the way.
Thank you. Well, until the next time we end up picking another topic to tackle together, thank you so much for...